It's so fun. Right, but we always start an episode with like some good laughter, man.
Yo, we alive. Holy cow. We back in this thing.
Yeah.
And I am sitting across from the man, the myth, the legend, MC Supreme.
Eclectic Sage.
Hey.
In the building, in the house. You already know. I love my name. I love my name so much.
Wilhelm here. In spirit. Lucas here in spirit.
It's Lucas here in spirit.
Yo, go to his website. Get yourself some
Lucas MG.
Some Lucas MG. Some pants.
Yes.
Maybe some jackets. Whatever he's selling.
Yeah.
Go buy it.
Beautiful stuff. I'm definitely going to try to see if I can get a piece for Christmas. A little self-gift.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't introduce myself. I'm so sorry, people. I'm so rude. I am the incomparable, the festering.
Ooh.
You can't get rid of me. Ah. I'm still here.
Uh-huh.
Trent L. Dixon.
God, I didn't even know you're not supposed to. What?
What's up, people? Welcome to another exciting episode of I'm Not Supposed to Be Here. I don't think I've listened to that song.
In a while.
Yeah, since the last time we recorded.
Yeah.
But since the last time we recorded.
Yeah.
Because we did record something before this.
But, I love that theme song so much.
Right. Yes. Yo, shouts out to David Bennett, who created that on his phone.
Wow.
Because he's an artist, man. Like,
it sounds so good.
Yeah, he can draw. He writes poetry. He did rap for a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't like to speak on that, but I have the files here. Don't make me play that shit, David. I will definitely play that shit on the podcast and it will live forever. But
we'll have a funk flex moment.
Put your hands in the red. Go to the nearest bodega, your nearest corner store, and put your hand on the register. Dave Bennett bought a truck. Yeah, I'm going to play the song for like 20 minutes like they did. What was that? Otis, they did.
Yeah, he was like,
y'all niggas are not ready. Put your hands in the register. Come to Kanye was in the...
I wish I was like more aware, because I was like what, 10, 11? I was like a little kid when that happened. So I was not really cognizant of like how crazy that was. But
that shit was like the hip hop version of the War of the World production.
Yeah,
it's like, yo, go do that shit.
Yeah, literally. Oh my god.
How you feeling?
Oh man, I'm feeling great. I feel happy. I feel like complete now that we're podding. I haven't podded in so long, and I forgot how much of a high, how much like it raises your spirit. Yeah, we gotta. Given life circumstances, we gotta always make time for the pod.
Absolutely.
And keep pushing and keep reinventing.
Absolutely. We made time for life, now we gotta make time for the pod.
Yes.
Before we got on air, we were talking about the album, Phantoms, on all streaming platforms.
Yeah, coming close to the year anniversary.
Oh, wow, it's been a year.
Yeah. A year retrospective.
Damn, it's a year old.
Yeah.
It's starting to walk. It's starting
to walk. You know, it's front teeth are coming in.
You know, it's eating solid foods now. Yeah.
But no, you were Steven. Because I'm biting my finger.
Charlie bit my finger. My finger.
For the old heads.
Because
I mean, it's old now.
Damn, that's crazy all the time. Internet time is a little different, though.
Yeah.
But whatever. No, but before we got on air, you were talking about how Phantoms is a lot of people's favorites, but that was your least favorite.
Yeah, like in retrospect, I feel like it's my least favorite on that project specifically. Like, I feel like all the rest of the songs like really, really shine and have a specific. For me, I feel like the more I've written, the more I've been able to tell like a color of a song. It's not like synesthesia, because I'm not that gifted. I don't have like that condition, but I have like. I feel like certain songs do emit certain colors, I guess, if you want to do like frequencies and stuff. And I feel like all the other songs like emit, like give me like a presence of a color. And I feel like that one's kind of grayed, kind of washed out, kind of muddy. And it feels like, but I feel like that's the original intention of the song too. this is not my particular like cup of tea anymore. Yeah. But like as far as the song goes, I still love the song. I think it's just more so that the person and the emotions that I attach to through the song or like I'm familiar of, I just don't feel the same connection to that person. Or like that song is just a very tragic song to me. Mm-hmm. So for me, it's not something that I like to hear all the time. But I feel like it is a really beautiful song, and the way it's composed and the integration of it, I'm so happy that that's the title song of the project. Like you look up the project and that may be your first intro to like hearing what may be in store for the rest of it. And I think like that's a great entrance. If Getting Off is not your first entrance, I think Phantoms is like a great entrance of just like that's a song that can exist on its own type of thing.
Yeah, nah, that there's definitely an energy about that song. It's funny you said that because that's exactly what I was gonna ask. Is it a lot of it's probably the energy that you put into it based off, you know, the person.
Yeah,
it's kind of.
I think with that one, what makes it complicated is like when you look at the lyrics, it's really a dissection of that person or like of that experience. But more so of like the type of person that would ghost somebody, and it's just like trying to like look at it from a very scientific type of like perspective. It's just like, see what your last man did, be easy because you know the fault rests on him. He didn't treat you right, set the precedent for the rest of the men of your life. It's just like, ooh. it's like there's no poeticism in it as much as like, you know, she was out of BK, whimsy that it hit me, I ain't seen it, it was different. That has like a profundity to it and like a type of like dissection that I think the project and me as a person and me as a songwriter, I was able to grow that skill as I wrote more songs to be more poetic. I feel like that was still more so of like my older era of like writing where like I would approach things very scientifically and I'll be like, all right, let me break down why and like scientifically empiricism, like try to find out why this happens this specific way by citing like certain events and details and this very analytical mindset. And I feel like as I've written more from a point of emotion. But shout out to Jules on that song particularly because he was the emotion, and so it was cool because like I was playing narrator on my own song, and then he just emulated like all the emotions perfectly.
Yeah, nah. Y'all make such a great blend, and I love the drop when he comes in.
Yeah, it's so funny.
Full transparency, I like the drop on the rough version
better. I'm crying. I know,
but I still have that in my phone, so I still get to hear it on a regular.
That's the best part about having access to like the artist. Like I know for a fact, like people be having like Kendrick has like a certain group of people that he plays his demos to. I'm pretty sure of like, do you think this is viable? And they have them drafts on his phone.
Yeah.
And they just be playing the drafts even when the song's out, because sometimes a draft is better than the song that gets released. Yeah. But the song that gets released, it's kind of like, you know, the raw ingredients of a cake are all good, but like, and like everybody loves the cookie dough, but it's not good for you. It's like we took the extra time to make sure that it was cooked for a nice prep cookie. And even though you may love cookie dough, like it still exists there.
Yeah,
it's still there, but it's not fully fledged. It's not fully cooked.
Yeah. So it had some growing to do. It had to marinate a little bit and fluff up,
you
know, for it to be consumable for everybody. But I don't mind the cookie dough.
Yeah, exactly. Like a cookie dough every once in a while. That's why I like keeping it. I'm probably going to do a thing in the future where I just have all my demos like in one spot that everybody can listen to. See how I... Because I think having the process be accessible to people helps too. I remember when I was younger, I was like, how the hell do I do this? How do I go about like writing and making music? And it was just like... I remember Steve Lacy was like, oh my gosh, he makes music from his phone. And like now I'm like, oh yeah, I make music from my phone too. And it's just like, and it's just like a lot of playing with and understanding yourself and the way that you write and the way that you do things. Mm-hmm. And it's always evolving. It's always changing.
Yeah. No, that's so dope that we have, for once I'm praising the internet, that we have access to see how things are done, because that's very much, it's very much a real thing to see other people, especially other people that look like you, mm-hmm. you know, people that reflect you, do something so that you know it's possible. It's not always the case, but a lot of times it is helpful, because I remember being a young artist, a young photographer, and looking at things like, oh my God, like that's it. You know, seeing the way people did photos seemed insurmountable.
Yeah.
You know, certain 100%. Things. And it's like, and then when you get into it and you start to see your peers do it, and you have, you know, you start to have those conversations. You say, oh shit, I can do that too.
Yeah.
You know, I have the resources, and all it's going to take is a little time.
Yeah. I think it changes the meaning of magic in a sense.
Yeah.
Like the magic comes from the piece in this fully in this end. And then that's only like liking just the facade of a building.
Mm-hmm.
But like, when you see the process and you see like what it took to do it, it's just like now the facade even has a greater meaning. Like that may be just the face of it, but like look at the beams, look at the blueprint, look at how they conceptualized it, look how they conceptualized all houses.
Mm-hmm.
But look at what the details they decided to put for this one specifically. Look at look how it's a byproduct of its era. That's how you have like the fullness, the liveliness that you can get. And that's like the soul of it, like that fullness, that process. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, wow, the magic is everything a part of that. It's not just what I'm hearing now. Like what I'm hearing now is only a snippet of it. Yeah. And like I could visit that snippet for as much time as possible. But just being able to acknowledge that there is more magic that I didn't even get to experience, but somebody else did, just for me to even experience this little bit. Mm-hmm. It's just like, thank you.
Yeah.
Like what a great service you gave me, and just everybody that has access to what you gave to me.
Yeah, absolutely. I was sitting here, and I was trying to think of like a piece of artwork that I did that I was like, I don't feel the same about it anymore.
Yeah.
I couldn't think of one. A lot of mine, like the rawness is still there with certain projects. Is there something that I feel differently about today? I know there's definitely things that I've done that hit people a certain way. That it was like, I was just, you know what I'm saying? I was just creating shit. I wasn't really thinking about it like that. But it was, I don't know if there's a, if it's like.
I think it's also a thing of certain spaces call for certain things. So mm-hmm. like Phantoms may not be my favorite song today. Because yeah. I'm not in the same place, but
absolutely.
Like find myself in the same place or something similar, or that emotional type of thing.
Yeah.
I play it, it connects again. Mm. And it's like, it's so crazy that, especially with music, like an art piece could not touch, it could be your favorite art piece and not touch you.
Yeah.
But like when it does touch you, it's just like, that's why you're my favorite. Yeah. Like I understand.
Is there like a piece of it that hits you and it's like, oh yeah. That's it. Is it like a lyric or like a like part of the beat?
A lot of it. I think all of it still translates really well. Like lyric, yeah. I'm still proud of it lyrically. It's one of my best storytelling songs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it's more of an emotional detachment from it, but generally, it's just for me, it's like a big stepping stone of like. So for the songs that, for one, it was the hardest song to record, because sometimes like when you're starting out, that was just like a song that I could write,
mm-hmm.
but not necessarily perform. So even when you hear like myself performing it, it's not like I'm 100% in tune or whatever, but that roughness adds to the quality. But for me, I'm like, I could have done that take a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
Or like, I think if I gave it more time till late, I could have maybe hit the note that I was imagining, but I feel like that song had to come out in order for me to make new stuff. So
yeah.
It's one of those like Catch-22 situations of maybe not there skill-wise, but like there like skill-wise in another way.
Yeah.
So sometimes like your ability to write can supersede your ability to record.
Absolutely. I definitely do that with art though, where I'm like, yo, if I went back and did that, that shit would be fire.
Yeah. So like I feel about that for a lot of songs on Phantoms. Like I feel like vocal performance wise, I think I can kill it a lot more. But that's why you come to live versions of the show.
Yeah,
that's why you come to live versions. People are like, why do the musicians sound better in person? It's because one, they're not. Recording is a different art in itself.
Mm-hmm,
and then two, like, they've evolved, especially with the older songs. It's like they evolved, they've grown with it. And I'm still growing with this project. It's really beautiful to even say that I have a project out. Like,
yeah,
it still catches me when somebody's just like, I really love that song. And it's just like, I'm happy that I made something that connects with people.
So before we go any further, I still have some comments about this project. I'm going to bring our special guest on.
Yeah.
We got another special guest. It's the same special guest from the last episode, but still he's special. He's my big brother, y'all. Hold on. We go get him on the phone and we're going to bring him in on this discussion.
Yeah.
We going to bring him in. Ring, ring. Answer the phone.
Answer the phone.
What up, bro, bro?
Yo, yo. What's up?
What's up? Welcome to the show once again. You're a two timer now. So we were talking about Sage's album, and we were talking about art and the timing that it hits you in. And I remember I had a thought today. I was because I was doing a lot of running around today. I had a photo shoot earlier. And Bombs Over Baghdad came on.
I love that song so much.
Such an amazing song. And I was thinking, I was trying to remember all the places I was when I heard the song.
Yeah.
I've been on a lot of buses in Texas. I've been on a lot of trains in New York when I've heard it. But I've definitely listened to it overseas. Like, I think that's like so dope. Do you ever think about that? Like, I think I mentioned this, but like the art you create reaches so many different spaces that you may not be able to go, you know, that you may never touch. But, you know, even like the podcast, we have somebody who listens
in Australia.
Yes, we have somebody in Australia. I don't know if I'll ever go to Australia. The spiders are fucking big there.
Yeah.
And I don't.
I want to make friends with the spiders over there. They're big. They're chilling.
But no, I think that's such an amazing, an amazing concept to have something that reaches people. You know, that part of you that sort of extends beyond where you're from, and even in some instances where you'll go. You know, you never know who'll be in the back of class listening to it in fucking Egypt.
Yeah, it's just for me, I think music is like one of those, like for me, if we were to talk about like ways to traverse dimensions, I think music would be the way to interact with the fourth dimension. I say that because like people talk about music being timeless, and it's like, what if it actually is like a timeless thing in the sense that like it's like replayable time, like you can catch the emotions, the feelings, like even with a picture, you can't replay the picture in the same way. Like a video has like a detachment from it, like you kind of remember the memory, or like it's an objective view.
Mm-hmm.
But like, so like it may be objectively recording the time, but like the emotion of like Rock With You by Michael Jackson, like you could feel that exact emotion in the feeling. And so it's like transferring through time, through place, through space, and just playing with that. So that's something that I think about is in relation to that. But I think, yeah, like one of the main reasons why I wanted to do music, or one of the things like I concluded, it was just like, because I listened to so much music before. And it was something of like, I've listened and taken up so much of this like energy from music. And it's just like, it's only right for me to repay it back in this way. And it was just like, I have the ability to do it. Let me do it to the best of my ability so that I can serve as this for the next person. Because I already experienced like the fruits of all these other people's labors. And it was just like very giving mindset. It was very, very like altruistic type of thing. And it was like, I just want to make sure that the love that I felt is communicated through music. And like, in terms of like, just legacy, like this will forever, as long as we have recorded media, that'll be the biggest expression of me as a person. So not only will you be able to take my lessons, my things, like, you'll be able to take my energy with you wherever you go. Mm-hmm. And I will, like, let's say I pass away, like, my music will exist to places I've never seen. Mm-hmm. So not only am I transversing, like, transmuting, like, space and time in the current, I'm doing it forever.
Yeah.
And it's just, like, that's a huge responsibility. And it's just, like, let me make sure that I put lessons and love into the things that I write.
Word. I guess that's the same with the podcast,
too. Yeah, same with the pod. The pod is just lessons I have to reteach myself just by listening in again.
Yeah, it's gonna be out there, and it's gonna exist if I ever have kids.
Yeah,
you know. But even, you know, the family that I have now, if something happens to me, or even now, because I'm so far away from everyone, you know, if they ever wanted to feel close to me, they don't even need to call. They can just listen to this and then hear my my little crazy rantings.
Yeah, but I mean, that little crazy rantings is what makes you you in a lot of ways.
Absolutely. And then probably in a way that not a lot of people in my life have experienced me. Just a real quick big shout out to my boy Chip, who's an avid listener, and my ex-boss Abe. They've both run through all the episodes, I believe. So, yeah. If you're listening to this, then you already know new episodes are on the way.
Yeah, we catch it back up. Also, shout out to my brother Nicholas. I love that you listen to the episodes and you catch up on time with me. So,
yeah, that's special. Shout out to my big brother. You still there, bro?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just soaking it all in, bro. That's it.
All right. Yeah, feel free to jump in. You know, I don't want to exclude you. we were kind of in the zone, you know.
Oh, no, for sure. I was on
that
listening to y'all, man. It just came to my mind. Y'all talking about music. I was like, this is like another form of expression. It's just without the beat. You know what I'm saying? Acapella.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. That's what a podcast is at its best. I've seen some spectacle.
Some people good with the beat, some people good without the beat, but I do respect this because this is like a portal. Mm-hmm. This is like something that I can travel time to. Like when I listen to a few of your episodes, I had to make sure I'm by myself listening to them because it was like a man cave.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like a lot of the episodes feel very meditative, and it feels very like homey, and I like creating that sense of home because like, home is where the heart is, so we try to fill it up with heart and space.
Yes. And this is also a level of intelligence that everybody can't touch on, bro.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You can bring this to some people, they gravitate to it, and some people listen to it and be like, oh, okay. It's because it's something that they can't understand. I believe this is like a next level, because a lot of podcasts, they talk about things about other people, all up in other people's business, and, you know, stuff like that, but this is mm-hmm. more like growth, bro. This is something that the future needs. This is something that the kids need, bro. Because the tunes, the waves that they are listening to ain't the right way, bro. It's the self-destruction, bro. Mm. I was explaining to somebody the other day, the times, you know, like the time that my granddad came up in. It was like a movement, you know what I'm saying? A empowerment of people, for the people, progress, pushing them forward. And then the time I came up in, it was more like a hustling time, but it was a time where people hustle to help people out, to put people on. It wasn't to, you know, be flashing, and it was like all for the betterment, you know, people buying businesses and stuff like that, putting stuff in a better position. And it's like the time now is all about self-destruct, bro. You know what I'm saying? Because right now the time we're living in and what the masses are gravitating to is destruction. You know what I'm saying? You look at politics, all they can do is just go at each other next. Everybody's just playing. I'm not gonna say everybody, but a lot of people in this day and time is displaying the spiritual war more than they ever did. Like, we've seen it, but we didn't look at it like that because, you know, like, we wasn't at each other's throats as hard as I believe we are now. The music, the black on black. Man, we just had a Juneteenth event where you had somebody kill somebody, though, bro. I never heard of that, but we had a Juneteenth event. And somebody got killed at a Juneteenth, bro.
That's wild.
That's the time we living in, bro. That's the time we living in, bro. So the ones like you all, me, that can bring this presence into the here and now, bro, I believe that we are the ones that reincarnated. We are the ones that are here to come out of our shell and to bring civilization, the ones that want to be civilized, the ones that want to be godly, or want to be loving, bring them back to a loving sense and not focus on negativity. And that's the big reason behind creativity, because a lot of people get creative. People are learning creativity in all different type of ways, whether it's negativity, whatever. So I believe this creativity is a good wave, bro. And it's going to hit a good airwave, and it's going to surface in different areas. It's going to travel in places that you never thought it's going to travel to, bro, because that's just what it does. That's the power of alchemy, bro.
Absolutely. Real quick, I think I've mentioned my grandmother on here several times. And hop in when you want to, big brother. But a lot of her name was Velma Roberts, and she was a civil rights activist in Austin, Texas. So she did a lot for the black community there. And she's pretty damn famous. They have didn't they just open up a museum she was featured in? And there's a book he passed on to me last time I was in Texas. My brother, he passed it on to me that featured her in it. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, so
that's a time that I still live in right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? The time that Granny Velma was at, she was futuristic, bro, because her name still lives on in this day. People still doing things, even for Dorothy Turner and other people, the Martin Luther Kings and whoever else did something great.
Yeah.
But that's why it's imperative, bro, that I said before that you never forget where you come from, bro, because it's going to be a big part in who you are today.
Mm-hmm. I just wanted to throw that out there because I will keep saying like my grandma and Velma, but I wanted people. I'm saying, yo, if you want to Google her, go ahead and Google her. You can learn more about her. But yo, straight up, that's where we're from.
I need to hear your music, bro. Y'all need to see me some of that music too. Yeah,
I got you.
Yeah, we go. Oh yeah, I got you, bro. Yeah,
I got you. Oh my god, I've been. You mentioned Bombs Over Baghdad, and like we were talking about the song that I'm coming out with whenever it comes out, Waistline, and like that song actually, like that song inspired me to write that type of song.
Yeah, I remember you telling me.
Yeah, because it was just the way that it was very complicated in terms of how it was written, the techniques, the subject matter, but at the end of the day, it was still like a crazy funky banger. And it was just like, I think that just that ethos like lives through that song. So even if you don't even like live through that moment, your influence does when you do it right.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was, and it felt like that song felt like so different from what you had done before too. Shit is dope and it sticks with you.
Yeah. That's probably one of my best. That's one of my personal favorites right now. I think like, every time you touch a new threshold as an artist, you're just like, wow, that's my favorite instance of self. Because it's like, it's a cool way to reinterpret yourself. And I feel like the best artists reinterpret themselves and their place and whatever that means to whatever artist. And I feel like that's the standpoint of like creativity and trying to find the most and just being very introspective and contemplative about how you move in life, your self-concept, your self-expression, and breaking yourself down to like the lowest of pieces to like build yourself back up again, to then not be afraid of like the dismantling and just like surrendering. And that was like a lot of what I've been learning for a lot.
Yeah.
For the little break that we had, a little hiatus.
Nice. Yo, that's interesting that you say surrendering. That kind of leads into our topic for today.
Yeah.
I think what we're talking about today, folks, is being present, being in the moment. And I want to go around and see what that means to everybody. I guess I'll go first because I'm always throwing it off to other people.
Yeah.
simply what I have written down is giving yourself and your attention to the now, living in the current experience and allowing yourself to be, you know, not thinking about the past and not caught up in the future. I think that's what it means to be present.
Yeah.
Big bro, what you got for me? What does it mean to be present? You there?
Yeah.
Oh, my bad. No, take your time. Don't let me rush you.
Oh, no, you're good. You're good, man. Being in the present is about being it's being aware, man. Being aware, and when you're in the present, bro, you gravitate to your perception. I don't know if that makes sense, but being in the present means every bit of outside of you, bro, everything around you. It's not about you no more. I mean, you in your mind, it's about you. You're in the present. You experiencing like more of life and everything around you.
I like that. Sage, what you got for
and
the
it's
people?
It's also a form of gratefulness, man.
Ooh. Yeah, I think being present is being able to relinquish control. That's really hard. It's really hard, but I feel like that's my new kind of interpretation of being present. Because even when you're, for me, even if you're like attentive to like the moment and trying to live in the moment, it's just relinquishing control from the moment and kind of just observing. And just experiencing and being instead of being like a human being, you'll be like a human bee in that sense. Like, you just are, and that's it. And
yeah,
that's
you're
not trying to do anything. You just are and just experiencing life as if it's a verb. Life as if it's a I think that'll be the title for this one.
Life as a verb. I fuck with that.
Life as if it's a verb.
Life as if it's a verb. I'll write that down. On
notes. You just gotta be R. We are.
We are. Why do y'all think that's important to be present? What about the presence, and being present fulfills life or gives life value, do you think?
I believe living in the present is accepting a gift, because a present is a gift. You know what I'm saying? So when you're in the present, you're allowing yourself to accept all gifts of God, all gifts of reality. And it's all beautiful. Nothing is really bad. Only thing come from bad is experiences. So I believe the gift is the present and the presence.
Yeah, I think evil is just the expression of lack of good, right? So like, I think we talked about that a lot on the Good versus Evil episode. So like, if you're lacking in like your ability to relinquish control, you become over controlling, and that shows up in a lot of ways. Especially like for me, I deal with like a lot of anxiety in a lot of ways that I didn't even realize.
Facts.
which is like crazy, but it's something that like I didn't realize was a feeling that I dealt with. But a lot of it comes from needing to feel like I'm in control, or at least have like a sense of agency in the face of things. And I think as you get older, you come to realize that like it kind of goes back to that existentialism of like, I'm not supposed to be here, in the sense that like you look into the void, as like philosophers say, of like inherent meaninglessness that they talk about. Like they say, like you look into the thing, you realize that everything is so grand, so huge, that in that environment, you're a very minuscule thing. So in the face of that, being present is a very rebellious act, because it's like in the grander sense of everything happens around me, and everything is occupied with being inputs and outputs and whatever system that it's occupying at. But like the level that you are and the layer of reality that you're experiencing, you just being able to just take that all in is a big thing. I feel like it's something that's important, especially with this new kind of like newish digital age. We're starting to get more used to it and kind of understand it now, like 30-ish years in. But we're still learning and understanding, like in the face of technology. But another thing is like we always have like ties to the past for like our origin, and it's hard to develop an identity in the present. So yeah. I think that's like another thing I've been trying to think about too. Like, how do you build an identity based off of the present instead of the past? Because you're always ever changing.
So have you come up with any solutions to that?
Not entirely. Because the present is weird. Even it's a weird phase because even as I'm speaking now, it's not present because by the time the words are heard, it already yeah. passes. So like the way that we understand the present is like that is super, super fleeting. Mm-hmm. And so it's really hard to attach to something that's like very super fleeting. And so you go to something that's more stable of like what happened, or like you kind of give yourself to something that's more perspective. So you give yourself to the future mm-hmm. and it's like you plan for things in the future. And then you could even do it very retrospectively, like all these things are happening at the same time. And then you can assign your type of identity to there. But what does it look like when you just assign your identity to just moment to moment? And it's just like, it just becomes, it goes back to the question of how do I ascribe myself to something that's ever changing? And I think the thing is like, you don't. So you just embrace like just being. Mm-hmm. So, like, if something is always changing and always, like, amorphous, in that sense, it's, like, it's still perceivable and it's still, like, moving and coming about. So, just kind of, like, just kind of coming about and just, like, looking at it and just observing and just being a part of that kind of helps.
Yeah. Yeah, that was going to be my rebuttal. Maybe, or something similar, maybe... And maybe that's part of being present, not feeling like you have to assign an identity to anything.
Yeah.
You know, because that's...
I think there's a lot of power in that.
Yeah, because that's sort of being caught up in the past and or future. It's like feeling like you have to... It has to be something other than what it is, you know. It's kind of how I think of happiness. It's nothing that's... It's nothing stationary. It's not gonna stay, you know. It's gonna be fleeting, so you can't really be happy, you know. You can only accept what is, and be. There's a better word for it. You can't be happy, but you can be. It'll come to me later. But yeah, that was gonna be my rebuttal. You know, straying away from trying to assign it. It's like trying to find, like getting caught up trying to find meaning.
Yeah.
Because I feel like it's kind of meaningless, you know. And I think a big part of that is, you know, that talk of future and past, you know, it has to be worth something. Maybe it's just a moment. And maybe it's all worthless or it's all meaningless. But that's okay, because if you have it, I think that's the value in it. You have the now, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's very hard to talk about the present. But I think just it's the present is a weird contradiction, and I think that's why we live in it, and yeah. That's why I think we're contradictions in ourselves, because how can you exist as a ever changing thing? But still be like solidified in a way. And I think that's like our biggest mission to find out in life. Like, how can we cross through time?
Yeah.
Because as far as we know, we're pretty much like the main vehicles of time.
Mm-hmm.
Because everything, if time isn't being perceived, then it's just everything happened already.
Yeah.
And so it's just like we're instruments of time. So we're just being perceiving.
Mm. I'm a philosopher.
Yeah, I love philosophy so much.
Yeah, as the same philosopher says, we never step in the same river twice. You know,
Yeah.
I think that's true about people too, since we're ever changing. We're never the same. You know. You still there, big bro?
Yeah.
Just make a show. But yeah, I find that, you know, as far as a counter to being caught up in the past and the future, I think being present is important because it tends to reduce suffering. Because most of the suffering that we endure is for something that has already happened or something that hasn't happened.
Yeah.
You know, with the exception of like getting hit by a truck or something, you know, physical pain, something like that. And it also, I feel like when I'm more present, I'm more able to be, I guess the term a lot of people use is emotional intelligence, but I'm better at, when I'm being present and I'm being in the moment, I'm better at regulating my emotions. I'm better at, you know, stepping back from a situation and choosing how I respond as opposed to reacting, you know. And I think overall that's led to healthier relationships with people and just, for the most part, a healthier relationship with my life, with myself. You know, I'm not 100%, you know, I'm not perfect. I'm still working on this thing called Trent, but I think that being present thing is extremely important, you know. And it also, from one, it gives you a better attention span too. And that's another thing I think that helps with your relationships with other people. When you're able to engage in conversation and really pay attention to people and not just, you know, wait for your moment to jump in, but really sort of soak in what they're saying. I think that's important to people and that shows them their value. And it also, being present allows me to be authentic. You know, I'm not worried about who I used to be. I'm not worried about who I'm going to be. Like you said earlier, I'm just allowing myself to be.
Yeah. And you know? I think a thing that we're touching on is a lot of curiosity. A lot of curiosity lives in the present.
Mm-hmm.
And
hey, you know what? I'm sorry.
You're good.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, man, you know, living in the present overrides emotional intelligence. Mm-hmm. Because emotional intelligence is somebody who knows how to deal with their emotions, but they'll still feel them.
Mm-hmm.
And they just know how to combat it. But living in the present is more of like, man, not experiencing none of that, but just the gift of now. And like you said, that's being attentive. That's being whatever it is you need to be for the world needs you to be. Because you already got you. That's the reason why you're present. Because you're the gift.
I'm gonna combat you on that. We're gonna get some sibling rivalry going on. Because I think... I absolutely get what you're saying, but I think that's kind of when people sort of react to something emotionally, it's because of something that happened in the past, you know? Like
that's something
that they're holding on to. Yeah, if that makes sense. But tell me if you think I'm wrong.
That made perfect sense.
You know,
no, you made perfect sense.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's interesting that we can all reach different. I feel like just because the nature of the present is so contradictory, mm-hmm. that both have equal weight in this type of like conversation. Like just because like it's fluctuating a lot, I can see maybe not being equal parts being conscientious and equal parts not being conscientious.
Mm-hmm.
And in the sense of like being in your state of mind and you're just thinking about what's happening and observing things very cognizantly.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can do that by just without a thought in the world. And they're both being equally valid ways of being present and reflective. So I feel like there's different ways of being present too. Like you can be present in your mind of like, wow, look at this speaker. Look at all the ways that the speaker is beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And then just naturally, curiously investigate something. And that's a form of being present. And then another being present is just not overthinking, not thinking about the past, future, or present, or even the things around you, just experiencing.
Yeah.
And I feel like they're both equally valid ways of being present. And I feel like sometimes people talk about being present and more so lean towards the curiosity aspect as opposed to just experiencing, or vice versa. Mm-hmm. But I think embracing both sides of that helps us in terms of being able to deal with like the way that life is. And then also being present when the moment is stressful, understanding the stress, understanding that this moment, this too shall pass, is a thing that my grandma always tells me.
Mm.
What is in the negative, in the not even negative connotation, but what appears to be a negative connotation, is that this too will pass. And it's like, part of you is just like, oh man, wasn't that a relief? But part of you is just like, I'm being called to meet the moment. And it's like, it's very beautiful that I can even be faced with a task this great or challenging that will propel me to whatever the next moment is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, that's like a supreme type of like being present, even in a moment of stress or something like that.
Yeah. So I have a, and I want to circle back to that a little bit.
Yeah.
Because I have a question associated with that. But
yeah,
my next question is kind of a two-parter to y'all. So why do you guys think that it's hard to live in the present moment? I guess it's kind of the same question. Well, no, it's not. It's actually three questions, but two are the same. And why are we find ourselves susceptible to distractions? So why is it hard to live in the present moment?
Yeah.
And then the second part of that is, what strategies, if any, do y'all have on living in the present? But you know, we can take time with that first question and concentrate on that, and then we'll focus on the next one. But
yeah, I think the present is distracting. If you were truly present, like a fly flying through, and you're just like, attention is going mm-hmm. through. So like, there is obviously like a filter to things, and I think some of that is trying to understand what are you filtering,
mm-hmm.
and what do you want the end result to be? And so I feel like intentionality and the ways of being present kind of goes back to what I was saying before. Like, there's different avenues of being present, since it's a contradiction of itself. So your interpretation of it, of whether it's through curiosity, experience, just moment to moment, just alternating between the two, that's like a huge factor in that. So I think the inverse of like being distracted and stuff, some of it comes from not being able to filter. Sometimes you have emotions that from the past and from the future that, you know, are equally as valid. And I think it's more important to not neglect those feelings and like address them in the present. So the present gives you an opportunity to address the past or the future, or the grander scheme of things, or the microcosm, and it allows you to pivot and play with meaning
mm-hmm.
in a way that, you know, your past self can never do, your future self can never do, the grand scheme of things can never do. And so, like, you have a lot of agency in the present.
Mm-hmm.
So even that is, like, a stressful thing to think about, because it's just like, wow, all the things I have to do are now, but it's like, I can't do everything now. And so, like, that little discrepancy of your ability to do everything and your inability to do everything is like another play on, but that's also why the present is very contradictory.
Mm. What about you, big bro? Why is it hard for people to live in the present?
Distractions, man.
Mm.
Distractions. I believe that's, he put it good, you know, and through my experience, you know, trying to live in the present, sometimes being able to, is distractions. And I feel that living in the present is less is better. The less you have on your plate is better than living in the present.
Mm-hmm.
It's more easy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's hard to dictate how much you have on your plate at a given time. Sometimes you're served like a fresh course of problems that you have to like come to solve because you're at a different stage of being present. And you just completed a meal, but you're hungry, and so, or your soul is hungry, so you have to grow more.
You ain't lying, because in August I felt like I got thrown into a buffet.
Yeah, so yeah. Like, so sometimes you have a buffet of problems that you got to get to, and you're like, I don't even know which one to handle first. See, like, it's just option paralysis. So that's another thing too with dealing with that. But I think that's a part of life. Just the gift that we have is that we're able to have foresight, have ideas of the past. That's why we even became like this type of creature that can simultaneously like love to study its history but repeat certain things in its history, but then also like innovate and push past a lot of things. Like, there's a lot of things and accomplishments that go unsung because it works. And we're very problem oriented because we want to make our surroundings safer. And so, like, when you're problem oriented, you forget that you had solved a lot of solutions in the midst of that. And taking a moment to acknowledge that is also being present. Like, if you were to look at society, like, we have cured diseases. There's diseases that used to affect us that will never affect anybody going forward, and like somebody in that present moment like accomplished that and now it became a past moment. And so, like, we don't even acknowledge that, and we're just like, oh man, we have to focus on the ones that we didn't cure yet.
It's kind of baked in, like, we kind of, in some sense, we take it for granted. I see exactly what you're saying. Now, it's funny because I was thinking about that with the podcast, and I had to apologize to a lot of people because on, like, a lot of those early episodes, I was extremely quiet. But I was running the soundboard, and I was trying to anticipate problems, and I was trying to fix things in real time. As opposed to just being a part of the conversation, I think that would have made it 10 times better. I was so worried about doing well because I respected you and Lucas's time and the people listening that I wanted it to be great. And I didn't realize the inherent greatness, you know, of the thing that we were doing simply because we did it. You know, it isn't a collection of mistakes. It's what we were doing. You know, it was our creative minds coming together and building something. And part of that is the mistakes. And that's okay because, you know, as we were doing it, we were allowed to learn from it. But I was just like, I was and sometimes I was freaking out. I was like, oh shit, the intro didn't go off. What happened? You know, but, and I wasn't present, but I think now more than ever, you know, I'm better at it. I'm not perfect. I'm still looking at the way things like hop up and everything. But
yeah, I don't strive for perfection. I just strive for good vibes and just happy. I feel like the mistakes when they make it in. Like, I had there was a person in here earlier, and I was playing them a song, and they're like, oh, well, like, for that song, you see how, like, the autotune went off there, and then it didn't sound, like, 100% perfect. And I was just like, well, for this type of song and energy, like, mistakes like that are allowed to exist.
Yeah.
Like, let it not be perfect. Let somebody, it may not necessarily sound the greatest, but not everything sounds the greatest all the time. Mm-hmm. Can't be, if you're everything everywhere at all time, you become so shapeless, so boundless that you're indescribable. And you want to give somebody something that they can feel that's describable, that they can hold on to. And it's just like that little mistake makes it so that it's more human.
Yeah. Perfection is a farce.
Yeah.
And it's a contradiction to what is human.
I feel like perfection is the biggest antagonist to being present.
Yeah. You about to say something, bro? I thought I heard a rustling.
Oh, no. I was actually agreeing with y'all.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah, it's a trap, and I often get, oh my God, I'm eating my words because I always still, I'm not a perfectionist. Here I am admitting that I am a perfectionist, but I mean, because I don't feel like anything I do is perfect. But I mean, it's contradictory to being human, like I was saying, because we can't be perfect, we can't be good at everything, you know. And what we are good at, we can't be flawless, but that's okay because, like you were saying, sometimes that makes the thing what it is. Like, a lot of times we'll sit here and laugh at some shit that happened. Like, with, like, the episode where Amalia was
oh my gosh,
was like, grab her right by the pussy.
Yeah, that
like,
was so funny, but that's what makes that intro funny. That was, and, like, that's, like, so much heart. And I play the episode, and I have so much laughter, and I was just, I even myself was like, oh my gosh, we can't even include that. But I was just like, no, that's actually
we took it out, and then we ended up putting it back in
because we were like, like it feels empty without it.
Yeah, it was such a moment and such fed into what. I'm sorry, I interrupted you. Go ahead, bro.
No, you're good. Because yeah, it's like most things. Like it tastes better with the little extra. Like, oh man, my hand spasmed while I was putting the salt in. I don't know the exact measurement of that, but one hand spasm worth of salt.
Oh man. What about you, bro? Do you have any examples of like how a perfection in something enhance an experience? So I'm thinking.
I believe that's when greatness kicks in. Great.
Mm-hmm.
Because I believe that I try not to be perfect, because a lot of times when I think I'm perfect, I aim to be perfect, I feel like there's nothing else that needs to be fixed. But when you strive towards greatness, you know, it's always things that you can, that's just like when you say living in the presence.
Yeah.
You maybe wasn't living in the presence, that's because you was focusing on greatness.
Mm-hmm. But nah, that's a great point. Like you can't, so if you think it's
like, right now when you hear me quiet, it's because I'm more focused on the present. I'm soaking it in.
Yeah.
I'm listening.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And I believe that's what we have to learn how to accept in life. Like my boy said, you can't be everywhere at once. But where you are at, that's where you need to be at. So if it's greatness, be at greatness. Let everybody else be in the presence. And you focus on being great and making the presence a more better experience for everyone else. And then when it's your turn to be in the presence, you know, it'll be vice versa. You know what I'm saying? Because that's how the energy goes. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
That's how the energy goes. When you're in the presence, whether you know it or not, there's going to be somebody around you perfecting greatness for you. So mm-hmm. that your experience with presence will be good. So while you experience present for the presence, you might have an officer over here fighting crime so that it don't reach you, so that you're able to keep focusing on the present.
Yeah, like you, that's another thing too, like not everybody could be present at the same time, because we still live in a world. Yeah. like we still live in a world, like you touched upon it perfectly, like you, everybody can't be present at the same time, because like I said, we evolved to be past oriented and future oriented because of like threats and just the way that life is. Like life is very difficult. Like life in itself is a lot of work to do or to maintain. Like you have to always go out to eat, you have to always go out to get water, you gotta always make sure that the things and the people that you have around you are safe. And so like you can be present and be acknowledging of that, but it's also like I have to dig deep in my mind from like an experience that I've been through before that will help me for this.
Yeah.
And I think that's another aspect of being present. Cause, remember my dad, he always tells me like, whatever you go through once means that you'll go through it again. And so that learning experience informs like your next present action.
Yeah. Shouts out to your pops.
It's just like when I meditate, man, when I meditate, something might distract me and I will be mindful of that. And I take heed on that and reflect on that. So next time I'm meditating, that thing won't distract me no more.
Yeah.
Ooh, that's a perfect segue to my next question. I want to highlight something you said, though. I just want to highlight when you were talking, bro, when you talk about perfection and thinking that you're there, and it stops you from thinking about how you can be better at something, yo. That is the perfect definition of not being present. But pivoting, my next question for y'all was, if any, do y'all have any strategies to remain present or pull yourself to the present, you know, to be any mindful strategies? I got a few. I remember, I got a quick story. I used to work at a country club, right? And we were dealing with food, so I would be running in and out of the kitchen. And if you've ever worked in a restaurant industry, I know you have, bro. You worked at Whataburger for like 2 weeks. That's my brother, that shit was, that was the dopest fucking 2 weeks of high school, because he would bring back so much fucking chicken tenders and french fries.
I have never had Whataburger. It's one of those things I have to get.
Trip to Texas. Yo, we taking you to Whataburger.
Oh my gosh.
You know why I got that job, right?
Why is that?
So we can have something to eat.
Yo,
nah, that's an underrated part.
I ate like a king
part.
For 2 weeks. That shit was great.
Underrated part of a dang job, a food job, especially.
But no,
I lied about my age. They put me on a graveyard shift.
Damn. But yeah, we were like, I love you too, man. We were like 5 minutes away from that Whataburger too. Like that shit was just a hop, skip, and a trip away. But no, when I was I was working in, you know, the country club I was a back wait, and I guess a kind of a front wait. I forgot what they, you know, I would bring food. I would take orders, bring food out, make sure it was prepped when it got off the line, added anything that needed to be added from my side. But if you've ever worked in a restaurant or if you've ever seen an episode of The Bear, you know how chaotic it can be.
Ridiculous.
And I was also, like I said, I was in college, so I had all these other things. And it would be frustrating, too, because, you know, we were only, you know, they were strict on, you know, you can only have so many breaks. And then you had people who smoke cigarettes. They were allowed to just go out and take a 5-10 minute smoke break. So one of my strategies, what I would do is I would take five. I would go to the restroom. I would sit on the toilet. And I had like this meditative ritual. I would close my eyes and I would imagine myself in an endless body of water. And it would come up to about my ankles. And I would concentrate and I would hear the water, you know, the waves splashing. And then I would say to myself, water, there is nothing else. Water, there is nothing else. And just that simple activity allowed me to calm myself, no matter, you know, who was being an asshole outside, you know, what plate got dropped, whatever happened. It would allow me to just kind of reel it all in and focus on what was important, and it allowed me to be present. It was like, okay, this is where I am. Nothing that's happened matters, and nothing that's going to happen matters either. I'm just going to do what I need to do, you know, whether how it happens is, you know, is out of my control. You know, all the external factors, I know that I'm executing the way I need to execute, you know, and that was, it calmed me down so much, and it allowed me to not, you know, get caught up and just be frustrated and not choke somebody because I don't know if you've ever worked around rich people.
Oh man,
it was a lot of rich people, but you know, regardless, they were still, you know, they were, you know, and it wasn't even like a top tier country club. It was like a lower, you know, kind of a lower tier country club, but it was still, it still provided that atmosphere to make you feel like you had money and you were better than somebody, you know, because that was kind of the purpose, to kind of provide that environment, you know. But I mean, that kind of helped me a lot. So that's kind of one of my strategies. I don't do it so much. Right now, my strategies are a little different. When I get up in the morning, something as simple as making the bed. I think just focusing on that allows me to focus on my environment, and it kind of makes me slow down.
Yeah.
And realize where I am.
Mm-hmm.
And what state I'm in, because I don't know about y'all, but like the state of my room can tell me the state of my mind.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, so if it's messy, more than likely, I'm all over the place. I also write a lot as well. I try to take, and especially since I'm in a learning stage at my job now, if I have, say, a negative reaction to something, I try to take that emotion and write it down. Because I'm also on a, since we last spoke, I'm on a big trying to improve myself and trying to become the healthiest version of Trent. And so I whenever I have a negative reaction to something, when I feel it coming on, I write down that experience and then I kind of trace that back to what I feel like the initiator of that experience is. And I think that sort of helps me regulate how I react to it the next time and regulate how I feel. And it helps me respond in a way that I want to respond and not react to it. And, you know, not just be angry at myself and not just beat myself up or try to blame it on the next person, you know. And it also allows me to accept me as a person as well. It's like I am still working on this, and it's okay to be wrong and to fall short, you know. And that's another lesson I have to keep learning. But I'm sorry, I've taken up a lot of time. No, how do y'all have
But it's crazy you say that, because when you channel like that, then you understand that everything that you feel, whatever, is all on you. Nobody does nothing but you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But I believe a weakness is when you allow your emotions to channel towards other people, regardless of the fact of what it is, because you control it.
Mm-hmm.
So you learn how to control it, and you realize that nobody makes you mad. Nobody, bro. And when you're mad, your environment, it's easy for you to live in the presence.
Because
those thoughts, bro, of not being able to channel those energies will not allow you to be the best you, the great you, or the present you.
Mm-hmm. Nah, you're right. That's a those emotions are a motherfucker, and that's one thing I think that's important about being present. You have to realize that when you're feeling something, you're reacting to something, it's more about you than anything else.
Yeah, and it's a crazy thing. Like, emotional regulation is a big skill that you have to, like,
emotional, because your feelings and emotions is basically from past events.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's very interesting.
Because how you act now is based on a past event. Like, the emotion that you feel now from the situation is based off something from the past.
Yeah. And I think now that you guys said that, I am also very inspired by that type of sentiment, because I've been pondering this question a lot, and it's like, how much, he knows I'm cooking already.
I'm ready to hear.
How much of your internal cynicism stops you from truly being happy? And it's like, yeah, like, yeah, I've been pondering that question a
shout
lot.
Shout out to the mimic and the cynic.
Yeah, shout out to the mimic and the cynic. Yeah,
but y'all didn't hear that. That's for future.
That's for future.
Yeah,
but yeah, I've been putting a lot of thought to that question. Like, how much of your emotional reactions and, like, the ways that you deal with stuff is, like, truly stopping you from being happy? And, like, what is happiness, like, aside from that? And, like, how do you reach that kind of, like, conclusion of, like, escaping a lot of those type of issues, or, like, moving in a direction where you feel comfortable? And I feel like, you know, just trying to understand the contradictions of being and everything is just, like, the way to get closer to it. In a lot of ways. Still thinking about the question. Yeah, so how do you feel about, like, about that? How do you think you're supposed to grow in the face of, like, your own cynicism?
So, grow, basically, first of all, to grow, man, you got to get those skeletons out. You got to forgive, let go. If you want to be great now, that's the way you can be great now. Living off of who you used to be. Acting off of who you used to be.
Mm-hmm.
It'll never work, bro. I don't care. And in another word, bro, and that's when we get to the contradiction of yeah, that's when the contradiction come in play, because you want to change, you want to be you now, but you can't because you're allowing that inner, those experiences that mold and shapes who you are inside to still exist now. I wouldn't say it's simple, but it really is. It's something you have to work towards. Just realize this is what I want. This is what I want. This is who I am now. You have to reinvent yourself, bro.
No, you're absolutely right.
If they ever hinder you from being whoever you want to be now, and you realize then that's not long, no longer you, bro. Whatever feeling, emotion you're feeling now, and that isn't what you want to feel, and you realize, bro, you still have some going to do. So that's how I deal with it. You know what I'm saying? But your environment can hinder you from that, bro. So
yeah,
you change. Mm-hmm. You have to change your surroundings, bro. They'll teach you that. You'll learn that, like I learned that in counseling, bro. Like, if you want to change, there's no way I can be a newbie around the old surrounding.
Mm-hmm. Because you know your triggers.
Yeah.
And you know your triggers, bro.
Yeah, and you know your weaknesses.
Exactly. And those will always be around, bro.
Mm-hmm. And you have to be... To add on to that, you absolutely have to be careful of the stories and this ego, the stories you tell yourself about yourself. You know, you can't be too rigid or think too rigidly, you know, which is, you know, living in the future of the past. You know, you got to allow yourself to be malleable.
Yeah.
And like you said, that's part of being curious, you know, and I think that's something we lose as kids, you know, when we're moving from kids into adulthood, you know, I feel like that's part of that, something we lose, you know, whether it be through experience, you know, we sort of learn, you know, what's acceptable and what's not by society. And sometimes we got to shake that. What were you about to say?
I was going to say there's two interesting things, like kids themselves, like they have no past to go off of. So like they're free from the knowledge of like a lot of those triggers and a lot of those things, and they're still formulating certain experiences that will guide them as they go up. So like that's a very interesting way to kind of operate as an adult, like you can do that. Another point that you touched on was like going to counseling, going to therapy, understanding yourself and triggers and stuff. I feel like doing that has also helped me a lot in like the way that I deal with spaces, and then it also makes you feel like you come from a privileged position, because then you see people going through something similar and you're like, oh man, that's stressing them the hell out. Like, let me help them out. Because like this is what you have to do in those situations. Yeah. But everybody comes to reach the conclusions whenever they're ready to do that too.
Yeah.
And I think that's another part of being present, in the sense that not having to go out to fix things is another thing too. Like, you know, being able to let things be as they are, appreciate them as they are, and then even if the idea of that thing changing or growing in a specific way may not happen, or you may not be privy to see that happen, just knowing that, like, at least in the current moment, it's still trying, it's still attempting, it's still learning, that's like a big thing in itself too. And then another thing I was looking at, and it was like, it kind of touched off like the mimic and acidic thing that I was talking about. And I won't go into the full concept, but this is like, this is like one of the notes that I wrote. And it was like, the mimic and the cynic do not need to be shed. It is impossible to suppress, the mimic and the cynic do not need to be shed. It is impossible to fully suppress one or the other without becoming an ideologically based man. But it is in the synthesis of the two that make it possible for you to be in the modern era. And the contemplative man who chronically balances the scale is blind yet just.
So what you're saying is we're both. We're all these things. We're... our mistakes and our accomplishments, and I guess being present is accepting those.
Yeah, just accepting.
You know, and knowing, once again, that you're not perfect, and you will fall short sometimes.
Yeah, but it's just the effort, just the activity. It's not a passive type of contemplation. It's like an active like type of contemplation, and it's kind of like that. I kind of evoked the balancing skills of like the blind woman and the blind woman and the scales, and it's like, you know, you're blind but you're just like you're just trying. You're going into a situation not knowing. And you're just trying your best to equal out the scales of events in a certain way. And it's not, and just understanding that things don't exist in a binary too is another thing that adds to like the scales. So even though the scales exist on a type of like binary type of thing, for me, I feel like balancing the fact that not everything is binary, or trying to understand everything is binary. And doing so, like, does a disservice to whatever you're analyzing. It's like everything has nuance.
What's up, bro?
Hey, I don't mean to cut you off, but so, like, yeah. I don't know, bro. That was kind of deep what he just said. Like, what I get from that is, like, so you are, so say, like, you are rich, you are poor, you are this, you are that. But you pick and choose which one you want to be.
Yeah.
That's basically what it is. I'm positive, I'm negative. It all exists in you, but it's up to you to balance that and pick and choose. Because I believe it is a balance in it, because I believe that's what the struggle is sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But you pick and choose what it is you want to be, because that's the greatness of you. Like, that's the God-given gift of you. You can create yourself to be whoever you want to be.
Yeah, and I want to add on to that, like, even saying, like, I'm a rich man, like, that comes with... Like, just because a rich man has a definition, and essentially when you're kind of contemplating, thinking about, like, what definitions and breaking the definitions of what that is, like, is a rich man to you benevolent? Is a rich man to you does this thing? How does a rich man do this? Well, the rich man has to aggregate a lot of resources and stuff. So that leads to you acting specific ways so that you try to attain the definition of what you're trying to become. And it's just like always being in a state of becoming. Like, I am becoming the rich man, I am becoming the wise man, I am becoming the lowly man, I'm becoming these type of things. And not really attaching
affirmations.
Yeah, affirmations, like I'm just affirming yourself, as opposed to, and always constantly affirming, as opposed to just assuming and being. So it's like, it's, that's another contradiction of the present, because it's like, I want to be
words.
Mm-hmm.
Tracks.
Yeah, it's like equal parts being and becoming. So we're always in a state of becoming, and I think that's when we operate our best, when we're in a state of becoming instead of being. So this is being present.
It's the journey, not the destination.
Yeah, like I am the journey, not the destination. Because if we were all the destination. If we're all the destination, then we would be just deaf at that point.
Mm.
And that's what causes you to be stagnant.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Your perception.
Mm-hmm. Got to be open to change. But Sage, did you mention your strategies for staying present or becoming present?
I think one of my strategies is realizing, like, if something's bothering me in the present and is stopping me from being present, I try to journal. I have a thing that I got from my therapist. Shout out to him. It's basically something where you write down, like, what's bothering you, what possibly could be the triggers, addressing the feelings right there, right then and there. And then, especially, like, as I'm writing it, I can feel myself like detaching from a lot of those emotions, or those anxieties in a lot of ways. So like it allows me to be more cognizant and not have the things like all in my face trying to like block out what I can see. And the second thing is realizing that I don't need to be in control, and relinquishing that control in that way is another thing that I like to do.
Shouts out to therapy.
Yeah, shout out to Dwayne Brown.
I need to go back in it. No, that's dope. That reminds me of a short story I read. It was actually a story about zombies.
Yeah.
Believe it or not, it's called Naming the Parts, but it was about this kid who's kind of thrust into the zombie apocalypse, and his parents taught him this strategy to give a face to all his fears, so he would list the things that scare him out, so that he could, you know, he can make them not so distant and so unknown, you know. But no, that's what that reminded me of. But that's, I think it's important to be able to put that down. I think that's kind of what journaling does for me. It gives me a name or a face or something to identify and say, okay, this is the problem. Now that I know that, I can put you aside and deal with what's in front of me, or I can put this other task on hold and address the problems that are distracting me from what I want to deal with, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's important. I love journaling so much.
It's a beautiful skill. I wish we were handed these tools earlier on.
Yeah.
And just, I wish there was more things, and I wish it was more accessible as a lesson for people to know. Like, especially when you're growing up, like, teaching a kid that could, like, be a way to counteract a lot of what negatively goes wrong. Like, I feel like had I known how to deal with these emotions in a certain way, it would have made the journey a little bit smoother.
Yeah, like something they need to teach in school. I've been saying that since I was younger. Like, they need to teach love in school and how to actually be, how to actually interact socially. You know, how to embrace not only your own vulnerabilities but other people's. But I like what you just said, and I want to use that as like another question, like, how what tools and strategies would you give your kids and just young people in general to help going forward being more present? And I'm gonna throw this one to you, big bro, because you got kids.
I'm listening.
Yeah, that's the question. What tools do you want to, or are you giving, you know, the babies, my nieces and nephews, and, you know, even not just them, because you also, and this is something, as I'm getting older, I'm realizing that, like, a lot of younger people are looking at me and learning from me.
I believe the main thing is, like, knowing where I came from and the time that we're living in now.
Mm-hmm.
The most important thing first is to teach them love, bro.
Mm.
Teach them to speak, say hi, say bye, and channel energy from outside sources.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, it sounds crazy sometimes, but it's important to keep your kids in tune with the sounds, the moves. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of downloads that come from. I believe also that you got to teach them the power of self. Willpower, because that's magic. We don't understand the magic sometimes. We self-doubt.
Mm-hmm.
So in all saying that, man, you teach your kids all that, and they understand that, and you teach them right how to use it proactively,
mm-hmm.
and they'll realize that what they do now impacts the future. What they do now would rewrite the past.
Yeah.
Because you are the past, present, and the future all in one time.
Mm.
Because what I just said right now was the past.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it also impacted our future,
mm-hmm.
which is now our present. Mechanisms, you have to teach them the mechanics, the highs, the lows, how to coexist with everybody. Even yourself, because you are your own person.
Mm.
Does that make sense?
Nah, you got it. Yeah, it makes sense.
Oh, that was beautiful.
And that's why I believe parenting is so hard, because a lot of parents don't have those tools. They only have what's been given to them instead of what they have inquired.
Yeah.
From self.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've got to realize that, you know, the people that raised us, our parents, were just doing the best with the tools they have. They didn't have it all. You know, and that's, I guess, that's one of the things, I guess, to, for me to answer the question, that's one of the things, because I always tend to work with a lot of younger people, and if they ever come to me with advice or ask me my opinion on something or ask me how I dealt with the situation, I think one of the most important things to pass down on them is showing them vulnerability and saying, hey, I'm expressing a level of self-awareness and realizing that I don't have it all, and that's okay. And at my age, I'm still figuring it out. But to do that, you have to pay attention to yourself. You know, you have to be mindful of that. You have to put in work, you know, and it's not something that comes overnight. Even a small amount of success could take years. And all those years of work can be undone in a matter of seconds, you know.
My fault. I got.
Nah, that was perfect timing. That accentuated. I like that. I like. We're gonna keep that in. But nah, that's
beautiful ideas.
I think that's what I try to pass on, that level of vulnerability, especially to men, or people who identify as men, or whatever. It's important for everybody. Yeah. But I think in our culture, especially when it comes to men, it's important to be vulnerable and realize you can be vulnerable. And in a lot of cases, you have to be vulnerable. You have to look inward. Yeah. You know, that's something that we're not taught. That's something, well, they're not taught often. Some, you know, in some places and spaces it is taught, but, you know, a lot of that is going to come from you and it's going to take work. Sage?
Yeah, I wholly agree with teaching and passing down honestness and love. Honestness, I think, is an underrated, I guess, virtue in a sense, because being honest, not only to yourself, but to others, I think, like, the more radically honest you are about the things and the way that the direction that you had, you skirt through a lot of issues that could bubble up. And then the love is, like, once, is one of those things that, even for myself, the fact that, like, I've experienced love at such a deep level, when it feels as if it's lacking, because it's never lacking, it's just not very apparent in the face of other things sometimes. Mm. In moments where it feels like it's lacking, I'm aware of it. And so it's just like, since I'm aware that it exists, it's like I can only reach towards it. And so it gives me the drive to be the better person. I know one of the gifts that my dad gave me was, like, the ability to understand my choices, like he was saying, like, the ability to understand that the choices you make now will influence the story you get to tell. And I think just teaching that is another thing that's core too. And I think generally that's a part of that. And I think just a love for, just a general sense of love for things, like a general love and curiosity towards things. And also balancing that curiosity with understanding that you won't necessarily need to know everything. And the need to know is not necessarily always coming from a healthy place. And it's coming from a sense that, like, you have to be honest with yourself. Like, is this kind of curiosity about a certain thing actually leading me to a good place? Or should I just leave it where it is and let the unknown exist as the unknown? And I think just finding the poetry in that is, like, really nice.
Yo, that is a beautiful point to end it on. Yo, oh, I love that so much. Yo, I'm going to start out the shout outs and thank yous. I want to first say thank you to my brother by choice sitting next to me. And then I want to say thank you to my brother by blood over the phone. I truly do appreciate y'all for being here and being present and just showering me with your thoughts and your wisdom. I feel so good right now just sitting back and listening to y'all and soaking it all in. I appreciate y'all.
I appreciate you, Citra. You get a shout out because it's just like there's a lot of things that I just know, like, if I go to you for them, it's just like I just feel more at peace. So I just thank you for that. And I thank Lucas and Spirit for just introducing us because it's been mad loves ever since.
Always. Big bro, you got any shout outs, any thank yous you wanna throw out there in the universe before we hop off the episode?
Shout out to the world. Love, understanding, peace. Those three everything the other way it used to be.
Yeah, also shout out to my therapist. He's a great man. Thank you so much. And shout out to any people that decide to go into a field with the intention to change and do so and like are very active in their activism. And I think that's being active in your activism and being an active person in your life is a very hard thing to do. And I appreciate all those people that do that presently. And shout out to them.
Yeah. All right, big bro. We're going to get off so I can close out the episode. All right. I love you. So I'm going to holler at you. And I once again, I appreciate you for being on this episode. All right.
Yeah. Shout out to you, man.
Call away, man. All right, y'all. Y'all have a good night, bro.
All right. Love you, bro. Peace, peace.
Peace.
Have a good night. Peace.
Yo. And shout out to the audience.
Yeah.
I want y'all to know that, you know, this is I want this to be a safe space for y'all to reach out with anything that you may have or that you're going through.
Yeah, y'all can reach out to us.
You know, via Instagram at I'm Not Supposed to Be Here, at Dynamic Lover on Instagram.
At Eclectic Sage.
You know, whatever. We here. And yeah. Thank you guys. You have been a very present and mindful and visible audience.
Just something about a body got me so mesmerized. Okay, baby.